Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the recording of The Fugitive. I am here with my partner in crime, Jack, from the Drunk Bondcast. Jack, welcome.
Siko, how are you?
I am excellent.
Good to be here. Very happy.
So am I. Extremely happy.
Let's do this, man. Let's rock and roll.
Yes. I'm taking a sip first, though.
Okay. And you're drinking scotch today.
Yes. I'm drinking a nice 12-year-old Cardhu.
I was going to go that route, but I couldn't have rum or whiskey for breakfast where I live. So I'm starting off easy with a Bloody Mary.
Yeah. Well, it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Perfect time to go.
Yeah. It's good for you. Whiskey. Yeah.
All right. Good
deal. Anyway, first of all, how was the Black Passion?
The Black Passion, my friend, is my new passion. I voice that on everybody who comes to visit.
Change your life.
It's mind and life altering.
Good deal. For your listeners who don't know, I had that at my on my honeymoon in Goldeneye, in Jamaica, and Siko was kind enough to take my advice and drink it himself, and now he's a better man for it.
I am absolutely the better man for that. I can recommend it to anyone.
Glad to hear it.
Yes, absolutely. Now, if only some people who were in The Fugitive were drinking some of that, you know, Black Passion, then life would be much better for them.
I know. They wouldn't have to deal with this mess.
No, specifically those cops.
Yeah, those cops have a bit of an attitude.
Yes.
And they're not very good at their job.
Not very good. No. Is that a Chicago thing? Or are they just basic assholes?
I think just it's easy to just make the cops into bumbling idiots on a movie, you know? So it doesn't matter the city.
Chicago Keystone Cops, huh?
Yeah. You ever been to Chicago?
Once.
Yeah. My sister lives there. It's a great city.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was in winter, so I can't really, you know, say it was that great of an experience. But
yeah, it's tough in the winter. Yeah. It's a good time, though.
Well, maybe I should visit again once the United States lets me back in again.
Oh, they put you on a list?
Oh, that, and I'm not vaccinated, so I'm never going to get in.
Okay.
I'm one of those.
I think they dropped that, so you should be good now.
Really? They dropped that? Oh, that's
good. Yeah. So come on, man.
Well, there you go. Okay, so we both watched The Fugitive, and we probably watched it like millions of times, but we specifically watched this for this episode. So which version did you watch?
Which version?
Yeah.
Are there different versions?
Yes, TV apparently. Yes, TV I came across or? This during research. Hold on to your hat, my friend. Hold on.
Give it to me.
There is a ghost in this movie.
A ghost?
A ghost, yes. In the original theatrical and in the videotape version, apparently a visage of a man can be seen in the train wreck. They edited that out for the digital version.
Did you see it?
Well, I vaguely recall remembering that from the video version, because I watched that, well, a couple of hundred times because I had it on video. Mm-hmm. But I remember when they were talking about it on some documentary, it was like, yeah, that was odd that there was some dude there, because it was like this vague apparition in the background. And I figured it was just some tech guy or some mistake they made. But apparently, no, nobody could account for this dude.
Now, is it some bullshit thing like the Wizard of Oz, like that guy hung himself or whatever, or is this like legit?
Well,
we got a real ghost on our hands.
We might have a real ghost on our hands, yes.
Oh, well, that's spooky.
But then again, if you look at that mess of a train wreck, you know, they could have just, you know, had a crew member die and just sort of sweep it under the rug. I mean, you know, it's a big wreck. You can hide people there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of paperwork if one of your crew members dies, so you got to just leave them there and just move on.
Yes, just let Tommy Lee Jones scream over it and you're fine.
Yes, exactly. That's good. That's good advice. Well, no, I didn't watch the ghost version.
Oh, well, that's good then. You'll be able to sleep at night.
Right. Yeah, I'm not spooked out.
So there was no ghost in the hotel you were staying at on Jamaica, and no Ian Fleming's ghost visited you?
No ghost there. Now his ghost I would have liked to hang out with. He was a big drinker, a true drunk. I basically would have killed him. So he would have at least been fun to hang out with.
Well, he had some stuff to forget, didn't he?
Yeah, I guess so. Indeed.
From all those people he killed in World War II.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. The guy who played the wizard in Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm. Ian McKellen?
Yeah, the other one.
Oh, Christopher Lee.
Christopher Lee. He was in the same occupation. He was also an SAS operative.
Was he really?
He was.
I think they were distantly related, him and Ian Fleming, like distant cousins.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. No, and a decorated war hero. And apparently he was explaining to Peter Jackson at some point that no, people don't die that way. When people die, he would like show him like, okay, this is where you put the knife in when you kill him from behind, and he would make this noise. And this this impressed Peter Jackson enough to increase his part. So
right, well, yeah, he'd be a fool not to increase Christopher Lee's screen time.
Yes, well, they cut it in the Two Towers. I mean, he's in the extra footage.
Oh yeah,
yeah, it's ridiculous. But it just sort of, you know, he falls off the tower, right?
Right, right. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Stupid shit.
Love Christopher Lee.
However, this movie has very little stupid shit. Did you notice?
The biggest glaring thing I could think of was, why did they not look into this stuff at the trial?
Yeah, but there was like, you know, they just were out to get him.
Yeah, but I mean, it had been pretty simple if Harrison, Richard Kimball saw the guy, if he could identify him, mm-hmm. Well, you do the same hard target search of people with prosthetics in the area with police records. Boom, there you go. There's Sykes. Was it him? Yes, that was him.
There you go.
But
he should have.
That was the biggest
believe him, did he?
Thing I could think of. I guess
they didn't believe him, and everybody was just to make a big collar.
I guess so. Of course, we didn't really get too much of the trial, the arrest.
No, and so, I think Kimball was shocked enough that, and he had this like suspicious look about him, and he was aloof and detached, and you know, like most surgeons are, they're all weird.
Must have been the beard.
He probably self-incriminated.
Maybe so.
And the phone call does not help.
Right, her phone call.
Yeah.
Where was the killer during that phone call? Was he in the bathroom?
I'm not really. That's one of those things. Why was he in the apartment? I mean, he went there to look for stuff, or was he supposed to kill Kimball?
I was never really clear on that. I was hoping you'd have all these answers, but I'm not sure why. Because at the end, he says, why Helen? So, but we never get that answer. Why did they have to kill the wife?
She was just in the wrong place at the wrong time, I guess.
Yeah.
Here she was throwing around rose petals, waiting for Richard Bearded Face to come and tickle her.
When was the last time your wife put rose petals around the house for you?
Well, that's been a while.
Been a minute?
Yeah, it's been a half.
I've yet to experience it, so let me know. You know, I'll let you know if it ever happens.
Well, you're going to have kids, so
it might be a while.
That's going to take some planning.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll let her know.
Yeah. No, I have one of those wives who would never throw around rose petals. That would make a mess.
Yeah. I mean, who's going to clean that up?
Yeah. Exactly. You have to call the maid, and it's a hassle. Yeah,
that's not romantic.
No, not at all. Having the maid around while you're having, you know, sexy time, that's not romantic at all.
That's not going to work. Might work in the movies, but it doesn't work in real life. But was the plan to kill the wife and frame Richard for it? Was that the actual plan?
I'm not sure.
To make him go away?
Could be.
Yeah, they never really...
they don't elaborate. And I watched part of the original TV show for the episode. Because it's based on an actual television show from 1964 to 1967.
Right.
And it culminated in, I think it's like the highest viewed television episode before Dallas, before that whole they shot JR thing, right? So I watched some of it, and they divert enough from the TV show that it becomes a little convoluted.
Yeah. I've never seen the TV show. I remember my mom telling me about the show growing up. And how when the finale aired, they lived in a small town, mm-hmm. and like the streets were empty. Like no one was going anywhere. Everyone was staying home to watch this finale because they had to figure out who the one-armed man was or how this whole thing ended. It's a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah. And that shocks me for a very simple reason. I mean, I enjoy American television shows. You know, I'm a European and we get a lot of American stuff. It's great. It's entertaining. And what we notice is you are so good. So excellent at, you know, making compelling television shows and then ending them in the most god-awful way.
So did
as
you
if
not
the
like
the notion of ending the show never entered into anyone's mind?
Did you not like the end of The Fugitive? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's one of it's the first TV show that was episodic, because before then it was, you know, just loose episode that had no connection to each other. So this was one of the first, you know, non-miniseries episodic TV shows. And it's kind of like, well, they must have had the ending in mind then. But these days, when you watch a TV show, I mean, The Sopranos, remember the ending of The Sopranos?
I do.
I don't understand the ending of The Sopranos. It just
I didn't watch it at the time. I watched it later in life. That would have pissed me off so much as a fan when that aired.
Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
I mean, that was just, it caused riots.
Of course, like the buildup to a finale is huge, and you have your idea. Everyone has their own idea of how it should end.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, most people are always going to be disappointed because it didn't end the way they feel it should end. So that's just tough to end a popular show.
Yeah.
Or a show anyway.
And the show is about making it compelling enough to tune in next week. And I guess the idea is that once you end it, you just end it and there's no more money coming in. So why bother writing a decent ending?
Right. It's over. Who cares?
It's over. Let's go on to the next project.
Let's cash the check and move on.
Yeah. So I looked into this and they had 120 hours of television. And they took 5 years and wrote 25 scripts with 8 different writers. And by the time they started shooting this movie, they still didn't have a complete script, but Harrison Ford loved it. So they had a star. So they were like, hey, man, Harrison has a window. Let's go. You know, so they put it was he was like at the height of his powers. You know, he was like, you know, right in between the Indiana Jones movies. And it was like anything he wanted to do, it would be greenlit and they would have a budget for it because he was bankable.
Yeah, this was 92, 93.
They probably shot it in 92. And they shot it in like 50 days, which is mind-boggling when you think of, you know, the amount of scenes it takes. And so they were still writing the script while they were doing the movie.
Yeah, I saw that. That like stresses me out.
Yeah, it would freak me out.
Yeah, all this money coming in.
What are we going to do today? I don't know.
What the hell we're doing. let's just wing it. Yeah.
Kind of like our podcast, like, hey, let's have a drink and just
exactly.
You know,
are you saying this isn't well researched and super professional?
Oh, of course it is. Because we are both ultra professional. I mean, we are the two ultra professionals of our network.
Exactly. That's, I mean, I wasn't gonna say it, but yeah, you're right.
I have to. I'm well, you know, it's the meeting of the minds, right? Because besides that, we are the most fun at, you know, the office parties.
Exactly.
Yeah. So they were still writing the script during filming. And apparently there's one actor who is great at ad-libbing. He really steered the movie in different directions, which was one Tommy Lee Jones, who actually got the Oscar for Best Supporting Role. Most of the stuff you hear him say is actually just him, just taking the script and taking it and just doing something with it.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, it's like the people remark this. It's like, oh, yes, well, then you have the script. But then you have Tommy Lee Jones's performance, and it's like this guy was a force of nature. It's like whatever he said was so much better than what we could have written. And since they didn't have much written anyway, I think Tommy just saw his opportunity here. He was like, well, there's this big hole here. Why don't I just fill this with some of my great talent?
Yeah, it's a pretty fun role to play. It's like no-nonsense cop or marshal with kind of a Southern type of drawl, you know, where he does things the old-fashioned way.
Yeah, you would know something about that, wouldn't you?
I would, very much. So yeah, it's easy role to play, but I think for him, I think he's from the South. He went to Tennessee or something like that, which is in the South.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably was a pretty easy, fun role for him.
So what kind of accent was he speaking? Because it sounds Texan to me. But all Americans who have an accent sound
Texas
Texan.
Texas or like Kentucky, Tennessee kind of thing.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's like 15 different American accents, different regions. Yeah, that's what I would have guessed. And he went to Tennessee. He was actually, I think, roommates with our former vice president, Al Gore. So if you want a fun fact there.
Wow.
Yeah, when they went to Tennessee together, I think.
He could have gone into politics then.
Yeah, I think that's right.
My notes, environmental movies.
Yeah, my notes rarely lie. Often they do, but.
Yeah, but he would like say stuff like, we are all fascinated if we find leg irons with no legs in them. This is at the point where Richard Kimball is escaping custody. Okay, so he's on a prison bus, right? They're taking him from what, jail to prison?
Right.
Right, something like that. They don't explain this, but he's been taken from, I assume his court case is over. But on the other hand, there are other guys on that bus who are like hardcore felons. and they're all wearing these overalls, which kind of suggests they've been processed, right?
Yeah.
And so those guys have a plan. So they've been doing this for a while because they figured out a way to escape, right? Because they're you know, they're exchanging looks, and Kimball is out of the loop. He's like, shit, what's happening around? What's happening here?
Fill me in.
Giving him the stinky eyes, like, you better shut the fuck up, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, I never thought of that. Why they're even on that bus, because they seem like they're already in prison.
Yeah, and the first thing that struck me was, okay, so here's a guy who's choking, right? He's choking him. He's vomiting, and he's like foaming at the mouth. Kimball is a doctor. You would expect him to like yell out, I'm a doctor. Uncuff me so I can help this man, right? On the other hand, he knows something is boiling, something is going on. So he just keeps his mouth shut.
Yeah, maybe he's, yeah. Maybe he just at this point just doesn't give a shit anymore. He's like, I'll just let the guy die.
They condemned him to death.
Yeah, so I'll just let this guy die too.
Yeah, so is that like, you're probably more familiar with the American justice system. Is like capital punishment still normal, or at least in the 90s, is that still applicable in Chicago?
Oh yeah, I think it's state by state. It's state by state, so I think it still gets done. I don't know how common it is, but yeah, this would have been a normal thing to happen if you killed your wife.
Wow, and my wife watches a lot of murder porn. That happens a lot. So they're killing off husbands, you know, like birds down there.
Mm-hmm. Can't kill your wife, man. You got to go.
Wow.
No, well,
there's a deterrent. On the other hand, divorce is expensive.
Right.
I mean, it's either a long prison sentence if you're in an unhappy marriage, or it's death, I guess.
Yeah, it's just a pain. Why go through it? You know, just offer and be done with it.
Mm. Maybe date a little longer. You know,
maybe so. Maybe get to know her. You know, but that's, you know, that's a whole other topic.
I actually covered that with Katie on What Women Want. So
I listened to that episode.
Interested in that discussion? Go listen to that.
I listened to that episode.
So anyway, our friend Richard Kimball makes a beeline. And he's out in the woods and he's running. And so they call in the U.S. Marshals. Here's the interesting part I thought about this movie. Normally, one of the two is the bad guy. You have the cop chasing the fugitive. And if the fugitive is, you know, innocent and is the good guy, then it's usually the cops who are corrupt or assholes or evil. But in this case, it's only the arresting cops. It's the cops who are brought in to hunt him, who are actually virtuous, who are actually, you know, just normal cops doing their job.
Right.
Dramatically. I mean, Tommy Lee Jones is just incredible in this part.
Oscar well-earned, like he's just great. Like everything, every scene he's in, he's just fantastic. And
everything,
he wasn't a big star before this. Is that right?
No, not much. Well, he did do a lot of stuff because he's been an actor since the 70s. And I did see him in, which is one of my favorite movies that nobody knows about. It's called The Park Is Mine. And if you love action heroes, The Park Is Mine is basically like First Blood, but in Central Park. Tommy Lee Jones's character is pissed. And he wants to get attention for something. So what he basically does is he locks down Central Park for a certain amount of time because he's a special forces guy. And so the cops try to get into Central Park to dislodge this maniac. And he has booby traps everywhere. And he just eludes the authorities. It's incredible. It's a really cool movie.
Because the opening credits, it was like, boom, Harrison Ford. Boom, Tommy Lee Jones. Let's go. So it's like, but was Tommy Lee Jones even a big time name? It's not like it was.
Not a big time. Not at that point. No.
You know, so I was kind of curious why they
would bank on
his name.
He was in Under Siege, and he was a big part of Under Siege.
Okay.
And that was the same director. So I think he brought on Tommy Lee Jones pretty much as kind of a favor. He's like a stable actor, right? Like how certain actors are connected to certain directors, like Arnold with James Cameron, etc. So.
Yeah.
I think that's why he got top billing. They were just figuring out a way to, like, you know, showcase his talent. And hey, that worked in this movie, I can tell
you. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So that works because, I mean, he has all these great lines. And at this point, it's like he has the best one. What I want from each and every one of you is a hard target search of every gas station, residence, warehouse, farmhouse, outhouse, henhouse, and doghouse in that area. I mean, that's just a cool thing to say.
Search all the outhouses. Anyone that's taking a shit outside.
Exactly. Search Turn it. Over the shit. I want you to look under chicken shit and that's find right. this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, this guy's a leader.
Oh, he's great. But right away.
And it's like he has this team around him, and you can tell they're like used to working with him. Well, he's quirky and he's kind of an annoyance, and he's like, it's just hard to be around, but he gets results. So they just sort of do what he says. Yeah. Right?
And that's so right after they have to have like that, that cliche jurisdiction argument with the local police. Every action movie has to have that.
Every movie has.
Hey, this is our case. Oh, bullshit. It's your case. It's my case now. And they have to have that argument. And then, you know, but they always have to have that fight.
Yes, because the investigating officer has to be passionate about catching the bad guy. So this is how they kind of, it's a trope, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So they start chasing poor Richard, but Richard gets away. This is where they sort of explain that this is just some regular prisoner. This is a smart guy. And we kind of get to know Richard Kimball in a different way through the people that are chasing him, who are people who are trained to chase people, but also to look for incongruity. It's like, okay, what's going on with this person? How do we get to him? Where would he re-enter his life? They keep saying that. It's like I think the fact that he gets rehabilitated at the end is sort of a byproduct of the U.S. Marshals having to look into his character and have to look into what actually happened and why he's doing what he's doing. Because of course, Richard Kimball isn't just escaping. He's escaping to find his wife's killer. So like, his behavior is odd. And because his behavior is odd and he's focused more on finding the killer of his wife than evading justice, because he could very well just disappear. He could just stay a needle in the haystack. If he'd just done that, they would never have found him. But because at some point he becomes predictable, and that's what they're looking for. They're looking for a guy who's, what are his telltale signs? Everybody re-enters his life, like the other guy who survives the train wreck. That's the big black guy. He just goes home and bangs his girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. Understand that. But at first, the U.S. Marshals are like, I don't care what happened. I don't care if you did it or not. You got convicted of a crime. Our job is to bring you to prison.
Yeah.
But then the more it goes along, they're like, wait, this is we're kind of starting to learn some things. And maybe he didn't actually do it. And, you know, it kind of just gradually gets there to like, wait, this guy didn't do shit.
Yeah. And what I love is that this never stops the chase, because they still want him at the end of the movie. He still has to be in custody. It still has to be a win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have to get you.
That's right. Still got a job to do.
We still got a job to do. It's great that you didn't kill your wife and that, you know, okay. But, you know, hey, at the end of the day, we all have a mortgage, right?
But you can't just escape prison.
No, not just that. I mean, and he does a lot of other like criminal stuff. I mean, he steals an ambulance and he does all kinds of things that you shouldn't be doing, right?
Breaks
into an apartment.
Steals that old man's food.
Steals an old man. Yeah.
Steals from the elderly. You don't like him so much anymore, do you?
Yeah, that. And he walks around with his fly open. And
yeah, that's not, you know, there are children around.
I mean, this is not a PG movie now.
Right. So that's, you know, that's not cool. Now he's a sex offender.
So that's quite a list he's accumulating here.
Yeah. And that's just off the top of our head.
Yeah. I mean, we could start keeping score, but, you know, it's we have U.S. Marshals to do that. And at some point, they start interviewing his coworkers and the people he knows. And it just paints a really different picture. It's like, really, what's going on here? It's like, this is not your typical condemned to death prisoner.
Right.
And it's like they have like this constant, like cynical undertone about everything, which I kind of enjoy.
The Marshals?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, they don't believe him. I mean, what are the odds that he's actually innocent? So it's like, yeah, I'm sure his story is nice, but.
Yeah, I mean, he's convicted of killing his wife. You would assume the verdict would have been appealed, you know, before he gets to wear like yellow uniforms.
Right. Right. Yeah, I don't know how long the actual process was.
Yeah.
Or again, why they didn't look into any of these leads that Harrison Ford just got by himself. But, you know.
Yeah.
I don't want to labor that point too much, but it's kind of an oversight.
I don't think we should, because this is one of those movies that just moves fast, and you just have to keep up.
Yeah, if you get stuck on that and there's no movie, it's like, well, then just forget it.
It's one of the one of those reasons why you can't watch, like, for example, Tom Cruise's The Firm too much, because you start getting into little details and you're thinking, wait a minute here.
Suspension of disbelief. It's a movie. I'm just going to forget it right now.
Yes. There's a train wreck. There's a bus wreck, and then there's a train wreck, and then other stuff happens. Just keep going. And at some point he's like in some kind of, what is that? A drain ditch or something he crawls into, and that connects to a dam or some reason. So he's being chased in those tubes by Tommy Lee Jones. And instead of giving himself up, and he's like, well, I'm condemned to death, he just jumps.
Just does a header off the dam. You think he'd survive that?
Yeah, a Peter Pan off the dam, according to Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah, that's his own little lingo.
That must have happened before.
I guess so. I'm not sure if he's surviving that. And he just walks away uninjured. He's just running away in the woods after that.
Yeah,
no big deal.
Sort of. I mean, he does sleep in leaves for a while. While he's sobbing and fantasizing about his dead ex-wife having sex with her.
Who hasn't done that?
That's what you do. When you survive drowning, that's what you do. You think about having sex with your dead wife.
And you sleep in some leaves to kind of get healthy. I've been there before.
Haven't we all?
Mm-hmm. How's the rum, man?
Whiskey. Yes, excellent.
Whiskey. I'm sorry. I don't know why I'm stuck on rum. Whiskey.
That's because of black spirit.
Yeah, my brain's getting a little mushy.
That was inevitable. I mean, I'm on my second glass already. So, So we're kind of in the middle of the escape and evade. And at some point, he starts to actually be comfortable enough to start investigating, which is pretty much after he gets a handout from his former colleague and friend, played by Jeroen Krabbe, Dutch actor. And that you are actually familiar with, because that's a Bond villain.
Right. What's his name again?
Jeroen Krabbe. You Americans would say, Jeroen Krabbe.
Okay, Jeroen Krabbe. I like that. he's in The Living Daylights. That's kind of a popular argument amongst Bond fans, is who is the actual villain in that movie? Was it his character is, what's his name? Koskov.
Yeah, General Koskov.
Joe Don Baker's Whittaker. So anyway,
And Whittaker is more of the bad guy than Koskov, I suppose.
I think so. Yeah, I say Whittaker would be the main villain, but Koskov is kind of up there too. I remember him a lot from there's a Seinfeld episode where he plays a guy named Milosh.
Right.
And if you're ever looking for a grand old time, go check out that episode because he's great.
Check out Seinfeld anyway. That's one of the greatest shows ever made.
Yeah. While you're there, you might as well just watch the whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the only two things I remember him from.
I'm like intimately familiar with him because he's a Dutch actor and he played in a lot of Dutch stuff, of course. So he was kind of a stable actor for Paul Verhoeven. He played pretty much in most of Paul Verhoeven's movies he did in Holland, which was like The Fourth Man and Soldier of Orange. And so he's in a lot of stuff. And because of Soldier of Orange, he started getting parts in English movies and finally in American ones. And so you end up as, evil Russian general or evil doctor in this case. I think he's also, he's like a mobster in a movie he did with, what was that? No Mercy with, I think it was with Kim Basinger and Rich Gere. So that's at some point he finds his doctor buddy, begs some money off of him. And the guy is like, Richard, what can I do for you? Because apparently, even though he's a convicted wife murderer and sentenced to death and on the loose and probably on TV, probably on milk cartons, when your friend sees you, obviously what you're going to do is you're just going to give him money.
Now, gives
him a ton of money. It's like, here, have some money.
Yeah. Now, Nichols ends up being the bad guy. But would you do that if it was a friend convicted and he came to you for money?
Probably.
Tough question.
Probably. He's your bro, right?
Yeah. And you'd be worried that he might kill you too. So maybe just give him $20 and
Here's some money.
Just get away from me.
Enough problems dealing with these homeless people trying to wash my windows.
Yeah.
Here's some money, get lost.
Yeah. That dirty homeless bum. Yeah.
What was that?
He has no time for him.
That's one of the, you're saying, well, you should go to Chicago. It's a great town. It's like, well, looking at, you know, how your windows get washed down there. Interesting.
Yeah. Damn homeless, man. Is there a lot of homeless in the Netherlands?
Not that many.
Okay.
Right. Where was I? Where were we?
Let's see.
Because we're getting into the weeds because, you know, well, this is a drunk podcast, sort of. So
yeah, Dr. Nichols just told that dirty homeless guy to get the hell away from him.
Yes,
then he gave...
Dr. Kimball shows up, he gives him money. And so in some later interview with the cops, he just admits to giving Kimball money, which is aiding and abetting.
Aiding and abetting. That's right.
They never call him on this. He never gets like squeezed or arrested or anything. In reality, you would just, you know, you'd have a big problem, right?
Right. Shouldn't have even told him. Just he came to me asking for money. I told him to beat it.
Yeah. I told him to just get the fuck out of my, you know, just like the homeless people. Just go away. Go away. Anywho. So he gets a couple of bucks, right? That's basically what Nichols tells the cops. So I just gave him a couple of bucks. He must have given him a lot more because this guy is renting apartments. He's buying clothes. He's like, at some point, he needs to leave said apartment because apparently the landlord is a Russian drug dealer or something. I think heroin dealer.
Yeah, something about little girls. He looks like a creep. So he might be doing more than just making them sell drugs for him.
Probably.
Yeah.
Although his mother believes in his innocence.
Well, there you go. So that's good enough for me.
Mommy loves him.
Mm-hmm.
So he's renting their apartment. The cops at some point show up. So you get this like you know, you fear for Richard Kimball because he might get arrested now. But they're not coming there to arrest him. No. They're there for, you know, scum drug dealer, son of his landlady. So the next place he's in is in some seedy motel. Now, okay. That doesn't cost a lot of money, but one would assume that's a lot more than some doctor would have in his wallet after a tennis match, right?
Yeah, I don't know how he's funding all this stuff.
Yeah, where does he get his money? I mean, is he selling himself on the street?
Maybe he stole, not only did he steal that food from that old man, maybe he took that old man's wallet. Add that to his list of crimes.
Well, he did. Actually, he did, because otherwise, where would he have gotten the money to get his hair dye?
That's true.
He did have his wallet, right?
That's true, yeah. But of course, the hair dye was worth it, though. I mean, right after that, some woman picked him up, and I'm assuming he had sex with her.
Yes, maybe she paid him.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Oh, okay, there you go. Now, okay, that all makes sense. We cracked that case.
Just put your mind to it. You can figure this out, people.
Okay.
When you watch this movie, just put your mind to it.
Quite the couple of sleuths we are. Well, that solves that. Well, I mean, he's also like, I mean, I know he's a fugitive, but he also is a man with needs and he's single now. So this woman, you know.
Yeah.
God bless him.
And it was a pretty big car. So they had plenty of space.
Yeah. That was easy money.
One could argue he wasn't in the mood.
Perhaps. So, like I said, it's been a while. So like I said, he has needs. He's Harrison Ford, for Christ's sake.
Harrison Ford always gets the girl. Even if she's Carrie Fisher.
Exactly.
At some point, he starts to think, well, okay, this one-armed guy had a prosthetic, and he figures out that he needs to find out the what kind of prosthetic it was. So he's reading up on it, and he goes to a hospital, his own hospital. That's the first place people would look, but he goes back to his own hospital because, you know, I think that's the ER hospital, right?
I think so. Because he went to a couple of hospitals, right? I wasn't sure. Yeah, which if he ever went back to his, because he clearly, when he sees Jane Lynch, I mean, she knows him. And then he goes to that Bones guy and he knows him. So I don't know if it's his actual hospital or what.
But then again, he was a big deal. You know, he was like a vascular surgeon and they work in multiple hospitals. So,
yeah.
And that would explain why some ER doctor would never know him. They would have no clue who he was.
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah.
Played Shave that by beard, though, so maybe that was good enough.
Yeah, and played by the lovely and talented Julianne Moore.
That's right.
Who we all know from, you know, Boogie Nights.
Yeah, all kinds of things.
Yeah, and all kinds of things. And she was also in That's What I mean, we have to stick to, like, you know, this channel is into action movies. She was in Assassins.
Okay, there's an action movie for you.
In a Stallone movie. She was in Assassins.
Okay, I've never seen that one.
Don't bother and just listen to the Stallone Network podcast on it. Then you'll get the gist of the quality of the movie. And
Slycast.
Slycast did one, I think. Slycast didn't. Slycast stopped at Judge Dreadful. Because that's when Craig Cohen just couldn't deal with it anymore.
can't blame him there.
No, we can't, really can't. Mm-hmm. 90s Stallone is just, the group thing they do, like all these like Rocky people and Rambo people, and they have like this little group seminar thing where they just, you know, do awful Stallone movies. And so they do Assassins. And so just listen to that. Don't watch the movie. Just listen to that. And then you get the gist of it.
God, I'll get on that right after this. I'm going to go to that.
Yes. It's best listened to drunk. So have some more of that, that Bloody Mary. Anywho, so we get to watch the lovely Julianne Moore, still one of the hottest redheads in movies ever, in my opinion.
She looks great.
Oh.
It's rare when you see a young Julianne Moore. Like, you know, she's, what is she, in her 20s probably still?
Must be.
Yeah, she looks really good.
Oh,
yeah. I never thought she was like a, you know, this gorgeous woman. But in this movie, I was like, man, she looks great.
Yeah, it's the red hair and it's the anger, especially anger. Red hair. Well,
the red hair. Yeah. Woman. Mm-hmm. Oh. That symbolizes the anger she has.
Definitely.
Terrible doctor, though.
Awful. Yeah. But then again, it's the Chicago place, right? And we all know the Chicago place from ER. That's not the hospital you want to go to.
No.
If you just look at, they're all fucking each other and they're all having all kinds of problems with each other. It's the worst hospital imaginable.
Unprofessional. And she, I mean, leaves a janitor to take care of that patient to make sure he gets where he needs to go.
She just walks away.
Yeah. And misdiagnoses that patient, by the way. That kid was going to die.
The kid was going to die. They were just going to leave him out in that gurney. He was already in his death rattle. And so here you have this kind-hearted soul who takes a moment of time out of his life to look at his x-rays, and all she does is complain that he brought that kid to a competent doctor who could actually fix that kid, because obviously she wasn't up to it.
Yeah. Why are you so interested in my patient's chart? It's like, well, sorry, lady, this is what happens when you leave a patient's care up to a fucking janitor. That's what happens. I got a janitor rolling me around. Asshole.
Incredible. And her main excuse for the entire thing is she's the only one who actually stands up to Gerard. She's like, okay, I'm really tired. I want to go home now. And he's like, quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, okay, you're a bitch. Go home.
Yeah. End of your scene.
That's the end of you in this movie.
Yeah.
Go away. So they start to figure out, well, why is he here? Why is Kimball running around this hospital? And then they see, by sheer accident, because they see a black guy with one arm, like, hey, let's follow this guy. And this guy goes, dude, why are you following me? And it's like, nothing wrong. It's nothing wrong. Just they had an epiphany. Hey, maybe Kimball is here to figure out who murdered his wife. Maybe that's the way to catch him. Because they're not into, at this point, Gerard is not into, doesn't care about Kimball being innocent or not. No, he just wants to get him back into custody because that's his job. And it's like, hey, if this guy has some stupid obsession with finding one-armed men, well, you know, let's find him that way. So they start staking out everybody who has a prosthetic limb. That must be a lot of people.
And it is.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a big city. So, you know, big cities are always understaffed when cops. So obviously Kimball can just break in when there's a cop car parked right outside of the apartment.
Number one, you can't just roam around hospitals, but he just pretty easily just goes into that person's apartment, right?
Yeah.
Nice and easy.
Don't think about it. Don't think about it. Just watch the movie. Take in the entertainment. This is a big plot point.
Yeah, I'll forget that.
Yeah.
I'm wiping my brain.
Yes, right? So it's actually fun because the entire time Kimball is there, he's basically there because he already knows the guy who's in whose apartment he's in is the killer. He already knows this, and he's just looking for evidence. And whatever evidence he finds, he just puts his thumbprints all over it. It's like thumbing everything.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. When they start dusting, it's like everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's like, I don't know. My detective skills tell me that we should maybe be looking right here because there's 65,000 thumbprints on this table.
Right. It's crazy. I mean, mm-hmm. The only thing he didn't do is watch porn in your
car. That's right, man. That's the more way to leave your DNA there. Any way I can do it.
Yeah.
He's going to leave it.
It's insane.
And so they got the point.
And then he has phone sex with Gerard. He calls up Gerard and he breathes into the phone and he's saying, oh, I just got a big piece of the puzzle. And he just slams the phone down. And Gerard is like, Kimball, are you still there, Kimball? I just hear every breathing, right? Mm-hmm.
So you think...
Are you jerking off?
So that was, yeah, that was borderline phone sex. Well, like I said, the man has needs. It's been a while.
Well, he was in prison.
Yeah, I mean, there's some human interaction on the phone.
I mean, he could have been in a relationship with the guy who, you know, got shot on the bus.
Maybe so, yeah.
Prison bitch, you know.
I think that was in the deleted scenes.
Could be.
Yeah, you know. Or maybe that ghost.
So it's a minor miracle we didn't have, like, if this movie was shot today and with today's sensibilities and with today's, like, you know, everybody's gay and everybody's woke and everybody's, you know, then we would probably have a scene where he would be sad about his prison bitch getting shot on the bus. I mean, that would be a sad thing, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, I'd be sad. Heartbroken, though. Maybe for the remake.
Perhaps a part two.
That's right.
No, there is a part two, but...
That's right. Have you seen your specials?
I have, mostly because I was kind of curious about drugged up Robert Downey Jr. trying to be in a movie when he should be in rehab.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was a good one.
It was pretty decent.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes.
You could tell, though, that Tommy Lee Jones was, like, you know, in his money-making years. So the performance wasn't as intense as part one, right?
Yeah, there for the paycheck.
He's like, well, yeah. I know this is shit. It's a sequel and there's no Harrison Ford. So, you know, let's not put in the effort.
It was still a pretty good movie, man. I kind of forgot when I saw it that it was an actual sequel.
Yeah, it actually, because it didn't need to be, really.
Yeah.
It could have just been a standalone.
Yeah, it was a good one.
They could have just done a spinoff. Instead of rehashed the same plot.
Yeah, I mean, they never even discussed the last case, the last movie. It was just its own movie. Yeah. I enjoyed it.
That's one of the things about this movie is that the chemistry with Tommy Lee Jones and his team really works.
Yeah, you could put them into any situation and it works.
Yeah, I mean, they have like these silly little discussions. It's almost Tarantino-like where they're standing like, oh, that's hinky.
Hinky, right.
Like the stupid discussion about what's hinky.
Why don't you just say strange?
You know, and Gerard is the type of guy who's just irked by that. And it's like he's irked by his crew and he's just do their job and stop saying shit that's not English.
Now, again, if this movie would come out today, we'd have to have 16 sequels on that team. We'd have to have spinoffs of every, the kid with a ponytail, the woman.
The black woman, definitely.
Yeah, we'd all spinoffs. We'd have a $6 billion franchise.
Yep. And of course, the incident that Gerard has with his subordinates, where at some point the other prisoner who got away, they already know he's there, allowing him to have his sexy time with his girlfriend, and then they're going to pick him back up. But of course, this goes awry, and one of Gerard's subordinates gets taken hostage. Gerard hears this, and his first thought is not reason this out and we're just going to talk to him and we just talk him down and no, he just blows this guy's brains out.
Just shoot. Ask questions later,
right? Old school.
Mm-hmm.
Old school.
And I love his
the southern
when
way
when his partner is, you know, justifiably pissed, his response to that, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, okay, that's some interesting HR situation there. That's traumatizing. So the, his coworker is sitting outside and he's like legitimately bringing up like, okay, so, you know, you could have shot me. I might be going deaf out of nowhere, this gunshot right at his ear. All Tommy Lee Jones or Gerard has to say about it is like, and he whispers it to him because he knows, you know, I know you're going to fake that you're deaf. I don't bargain.
Yeah, you think it's going to be like a big thing he says, but it's not.
The boss,
like,
from hell.
He just says, I don't bargain. And it's like, oh, so that's it? We're just not even going to talk about it? I have permanent hearing loss, sir.
Yeah, this is the kind of boss that you can't call in sick with because he already knows you're not sick. That's why he's whispering. I know you're not deaf.
Yeah. I'm transferring. I'm putting in a request for a transfer. This is bullshit.
But he doesn't. Instead, he starts to work harder and he puts his hair in a little ponytail. And later in the movie, he is like, oh yeah, Harrison Ford has blood samples he's checking. And he goes to the archives. And this guy who handles the archives, old dude, the cops start questioning him later. And it's like, oh, I haven't seen Richard Kimball. It's like, we didn't bring up Richard Kimball. I think you're lying to us, right? Yeah. Cops are getting to get their antenna up. It's like, wait a minute here. And so he gets like this little detective scoop here. So the first thing he does is calls this into Gerard. And Gerard is like, well done, young man. And I really like your ponytail and stuff like that. So he's kind of like patting him on the head when he does right. When he's a bad little boy and faking deafness, he's like.
So it was an attempt at some sort of story arc for him. But then I guess that gets cut short in the next movie because he ends up getting shot. Spoiler alert. Yeah. Sorry for all you fans that haven't seen the movie yet.
No spinoff for this guy.
No, he gone. Nope.
And then, of course, you have Joe Pantoliano, who's like the guy from The Matrix, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like
Sopranos.
He's like this obsequious character who's like all worried about his shoes and he's always sucking up to people they're interrogating. It's like he actually sucks up to Nichols. Do you hear that? It's like, oh, yeah, and you're the keynote speaker and oh, wow, and so interesting. And, it's like,
and yeah,
oh,
enjoy the fundraiser.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Speaking of that fundraiser at the beginning of the movie, what's with the models walking around on stage?
I don't know what that was, but it looked phenomenal.
I mean, it's a fundraiser for like childcare. Who cares about fundraisers? So let's just bring models. Maybe, you know.
It's all they're talking about is cruises and fishing trips and there are models on stage and there's booze everywhere and everybody's drooling over Richard Kimball's wife. And he has to drag her away from some creepy lobbyists, right?
People getting killed. It's fun for everybody.
Yeah. Interesting. It's the interesting work environment. It's like one minute you're staring down at someone's opened chest and trying to fix his arteries. And the next minute you're at a fundraiser and there are just these really ridiculously young chicks who know you. How did those girls handing out buttons for a fundraiser know him?
Say what you will about Devil McGregor, but they know how to throw a party.
We should get them as our sponsor.
Now that's the perfect kind of sponsor for my show.
Exactly.
You know?
Criminals.
Yeah.
People with money to spend.
They need.
You shouldn't say criminals. They are people who have a lot of leisure time, you know, just a lot of money to spend.
Yeah. And they play.
No good way to invest.
Fast and loose with the law.
So for those of you who are in certain professions, listening to this podcast, looking for a place to sponsor, we just want you to know we are very available.
We don't ask questions.
We ask the right questions, not the wrong ones.
That's right. If you think the law is more of like a recommendation, then we're your guy.
So Richard Kimball finds out who killed his wife. And then we head into the third act, which because he figures out at some point, hey, it was my own buddy who did me in.
That's right.
Yeah. So he goes out to confront him at another keynote speech. And this is where it gets interesting. Normally, you would expect it would turn into some kind of rigmarole where someone pulls a gun and people start escaping the room in a panic. But no, it doesn't. It's actually very civilized.
All those rich people are just so horrified, like, oh my God, he's walking around.
They're aghast at the fact that he's interrupting.
Yeah, all the gasps. Oh my God.
It the whole thing just happened so polite. And it's like, Nichols is like, well, maybe you should have a sidebar. Should mm-hmm. we have a sidebar? So
it's like, Richard, sidebar. I got a speech here. Come on.
Yeah, I'm in the middle of a speech, but you know, it's you. You're my buddy. You're Richard Kimball, and half the room is deathly afraid of you because you're on the news and you killed your wife. So who knows you would kill who you would kill next, right?
Yeah, let's go to the back room and just kind of figure this out.
Let's go to the back room. Nobody calls security at this point.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, because he's already, Kimball has already said, you know you falsified your research. And that is like, oh, so that's worse than having a killer in that room. It's
right.
Like he falsified his research. That's something academics really take seriously.
Because in that speech he was just giving, he's like, I promise it doesn't do anything to your liver.
No, nothing.
It won't kill you. It's fine. Everyone.
I
just
worked with this hospital, so we would have the most dishonest possible. Honest.
Seriously, man. Like, come on, do some
career suicide.
Yeah, you need like one more person to like make sure they're on the level, but they're just running wild at Devlin McGregor.
Yeah, because we find out that the guy who Kimball originally suspects of being the problem here, which is this Lentz guy who went on fishing trips. He actually wasn't the guy who falsified anything. It was Nichols.
Right.
They had Lentz killed as well. Or he met with some accident.
And Lentz and that Sykes guy were like best friends.
Yeah.
Because they took a million pictures together on these fishing trips.
Yeah. So he basically got killed by his buddy. They went out for drinks and then he just popped him one in the back of the head. We are at the end of the movie where the guy with the... that's one of the things that I found interesting. In the TV show, the one-armed man is the big deal, right? He's the killer. Mm-hmm. He's the reason everything happened. But he's killed off fairly quickly. The real main bad guy is, of course, Nichols. And that's something Ford and Tommy Lee Jones thought of on the fly. It's like, oh, let's just have a pharmaceutical angle. It'll make more sense.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because it's not in the TV show. So this is deviating from the basic storyline. And it's a pretty big deviation when you think about it. And
right, yeah.
And so here you have the problem where in the TV show, the main climax is the fight. And in the movie, it's on the roof. But in the TV show, it's in a tower somewhere or in a dilapidated building. Or I'm not really sure what it was. Sorry, I'm not really sure what it was. But you get a pretty decent fight. And so here you have Kimball fighting with Nichols. Jeroen Krabbé is not like the most athletic of people, right? I'm not going to say he's a pussy, but in the most movies he doesn't really play like the heavy.
No, but you couldn't really get a tough guy because he's still a doctor, you know?
He's a doctor. He has like sensitive hands. They're all like neurotic about their hands, right?
And Harrison Ford couldn't be like this complete badass either because he's supposed to be a doctor.
Same. They're not really punching each other like with full force because their hands are very valuable.
My hands are my livelihood.
That's right. I mean, they wash their hands 20 times a day. They're neurotic about their hands, right?
That's right.
So here are two guys basically bitch slapping each other. Somehow in that mix is Chicago PD because on the tram where the one-armed man got killed, he also shot the policeman. And of course, Kimball is blamed for it because obviously he killed his wife. So why wouldn't he kill a cop when he's on the road? Makes sense.
Right.
Would make sense to me. Shoot first, ask questions later. We're in America. Chicago PD is shooting everybody on that roof indiscriminately. And so they have to call off the helicopter because there's a U.S. Marshal on the roof. Stop shooting. They don't actually stop shooting.
Yeah, I mean, they're coming in hot because, I mean, they think Kimball just shot one of them. So it's like, oh, fuck this. Open fire.
You must die.
Mm-hmm. Cops don't take kindly to it when you shoot one of their own. They start getting a little hot under the collar.
They turn into a death squad.
Yeah.
You know, I remember someone saying, yeah, no, I can't watch the movie Cobra because, you know, suspension of disbelief. A cop would never do that. Really? Maybe kill another cop, see what happens.
Yeah.
So they're having a fight on the roof. Harrison Ford punches him to the point that they fall through a glass ceiling of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Then Tommy Lee Jones enters, or Gerard, I should say, and he basically spouts off, Richard, I know you're innocent. I know you didn't do it. Don't worry about it. I know Nichols did it. Nichols is there. Here's this stuff. That I thought that was a kind of an interesting way to go about the arrest.
Yeah. And if I was Kimball, I'd say, okay, cool. Where are you? And where is everyone else? Like, I don't need to be tangling with this guy since y'all know I'm innocent. I don't need to, because someone has a gun and there's only two of y'all and there's one of Nichols. Like, this is still a dangerous situation. Can you get everybody up here?
It reminded me of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but with blindfolds. Because they don't know where each one is. Where
right, yeah. Is. And then what's his name gets knocked out, right?
The flunky played by the Matrix guy, Joe Pantoliano. He gets and in a weird way, something hits him in the face.
Just knocks him out because he's like in a neck brace after this.
Yeah.
Tough hit.
Yeah. I take the blue pill after that for sure.
Yeah.
So Richard Kimball saves the day because he found something, a wrench or something, and he hits Nichols with it. Gerard knows he's now not only innocent, but also pretty much saved his life because apparently Dr. Nichols was homicidal at that point.
Yeah, he was taking it up a notch.
He was going to kill everybody.
Yeah, I've come this far. I might as well go all in.
Yeah, you know I'm guilty. Fine, you die.
Everyone's got to die.
Yeah, I'll throw you off the roof and make it look like it's an accident or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he had a plan there.
Once you're homicidal, I guess you're always homicidal.
Yeah, you're just nuts, man. Then exit strategy later.
Yes,
that's right.
So that's it. That's when Gerard kind of changes the tune because, you know, it's kind of like the cat, you know, catching the canary, right? He has the canary. He found Kimball. So he did his job. And then he turns all nice and sweet and docile and he's fine. And it's like, he's nice. And it's like, oh, let's get you a bandage. And, you know, let's get into a nice car and I'll keep all the evil Chicago PD people away from you. And, you know, don't tell anyone.
They're buddies now.
Yeah, they're buddies now because he caught him.
That's right.
I still believe it's not because Kimball is innocent or because he starts caring about him. No. He caught him. So he got his rocks off. I caught my bad guy.
I win.
I'm gratified.
That's right.
And now I can be a decent human being to people.
Yeah. It's a nice last scene, though, when you finally get a scene with them too.
Yes. Actually, the scene they should have had was his team at that point asking for a raise, because I suspect that's the only moment Gerard is ever happy. And that's the point where you hit him up for, hey, you know, all that overtime I've been putting in.
Perhaps a couple more bucks.
You like my ponytail, right, boss?
He's Joe, whatever is, when he's leaving, he's like, tell him I'm taking some time off. Screw this. I'm done with this.
Done with this. Great movie. I'm sorry. No matter how much we've been knocking it, this is just an awesome
movie. Yeah, I was having this discussion with my friends a while back, like what you think the perfect movies are as far as like when they came out, just popcorn movies, entertainment, just get your money's worth, fun. And I said the three were Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. And I said, my outside the box pick, though, is The Fugitive. Because it's like when it's on TV, I drop the remote. It's over. I have to watch it. It's so much fun. It's just so great. It's a perfect movie.
It's intensely compelling.
Yeah. You can't keep your eyes off it. Like from the first scene to the last.
Yes. And I think that's where the movie succeeded in capturing the spirit of the TV show. Because I think, because basically it's our grandparents who watched that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're the first generation getting hooked on TV. That's the reason they made this movie.
Yeah. And it's such a tough, I mean, history is littered with horrible movies based on TV shows. I can see why it took this long to make it because it's tough to do that. It's just so much fun. It's just such a great movie.
And this could have gone horribly, horribly wrong because considering how many scripts they had and how
this
one of those times when they just get it right. And it's just so much fun when they get it right. Like the other day I heard you on First Blood. And that's also one of those movies where it just could have gone horribly, horribly wrong. Cause there are like so many versions of that script. And there were so many people cast for that for so much time. And when in reality, it turned into by accident into a perfect movie.
Right. Right. Sometimes it actually works out. Like this movie was set up for failure.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, this is a mess.
This is just a cash grab.
There was a Bond movie, Tomorrow Never Dies, that same thing. They were rewriting as they were going, but it actually turned out okay. So
yeah, it's like they had the Thunderbolt script. And
one second. Two seconds.
But that was your dog, right? Not some family member?
No, that was my wife. That was my dog.
Cool. So, closing thoughts.
Perfect movie. Like I said, perfect movie, I think. I think it's like, what more do you want from a thriller action movie?
Exactly. And with Harrison Ford in his prime, on his A game, caring about this movie, a brilliant Tommy Lee Jones, great supporting cast. They had decent money to make this movie. They got like $44 million. And did you know like the whole St. Patrick's Day parade thing, that they used the actual St. Patrick's Day parade?
Yeah, I did know that. I could tell by the, you know, they dye the river every year. I've actually been there for St. Patty's Day. So yeah, it looked legit.
It looked legit. And it's one of the things that you forgive a lot of stuff for, because it makes sense that you would lose a guy on the run in a parade like that. You would just lose him. It turns into a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, it kind of worked out well for him.
Yeah, and the rest he's just lucky. I mean, when he's escaping, he's like interviewing at some point a guy with one arm in prison, and he just goes to basically yeah. a prison.
Walks and, in and out.
Yeah, and at the moment that like the cops are there, and he just gets out by accident because the windows are bulletproof. I mean, right. If those windows were not bulletproof, he'd be dead.
Yeah, again, one of those things where it's like, yeah, this couldn't happen, but let's just enjoy the ride.
It's just cool to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. One parting thought. So, of course, Jeroen Cabé is Dutch. And so this guy is on TV a lot. And occasionally you get like career retrospectives and interviews and stuff. Jeroen Cabé is still pissed off at Tommy Lee Jones, because apparently Tommy Lee Jones, during the scene where Jeroen Cabé is on the ground and Gerard comes over to Pimble, he steps on Jeroen Cabé's hand during the scene on purpose. He's fucking with him. He's stepping on his hand.
Really?
Fuck with him. Like, okay, you have to play dead, but I'm standing on your hand. So go play dead.
That's
now,
not cool.
And Jeroen Cabé is still pissed about that, and he complains about it in every interview I've ever seen. Aside from the Bond movie, that's like the biggest thing you've ever done, and that's what you complain about? A brilliant actor fucking with you for fun? Okay. I'm taking a shot on that.
Worth it, man. Worth that scar.
Oh, yeah. Anywho.
Good deal, man.
So we've come to the end of this recording, which is saddening because I've enjoyed it immensely. I've looked forward to
I miss you already, man. I'm very sad.
So am I.
Well, thanks for having me on, man.
Yeah, it was awesome. Because I have to admit, when I got, released from the leash, and Ryan said, you can do one-offs. It's okay. I was like, okay, I'm going to get drunk Bond. Whatever happens, I'm going to get drunk Bond. I'm going to get drunk, and I'm going to do a podcast with that guy.
Well, I'm glad we can finally do it, man.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Here's to you.
All right, man.
Cheers.
My glass. Appreciate it.